This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and Mike, we're at that point now where everybody's on OBJ watch. Everybody wants to know exactly where he's going to land. He's right on the verge of being able to clear waivers and pick the place that he wants to go play football next. And I feel like we need to frame the conversation properly and come up with some, I don't know, bullet items are the appropriate term in terms of what the, or some requisites, I guess that would be the word, as to the kind of place that OBJ would be a good fit. And I know we've thrown some different teams out there, but I think the most important thing when we have this conversation about Odell is making sure that there is a strong head coach and a strong culture that's already in place, because we've seen that this player, for whatever reason, has been divisive when it comes to locker rooms. Not saying that he's a bad character guy, but he's been known to split locker rooms and have players picking sides against their incumbent quarterbacks. And that's not necessarily the place you want to be when you're talking about a contending team, which is who Odell Beckham Jr. says he'd like to sign with.
Yeah, so, and that was per Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider. He's got the article up on .com that Odell wants to go to a playoff contender that runs an efficient and effective offense. So that's what we expect from his side. And you're right, on the other side, I think making sure you're in a position to come in and make this a low-risk, high-reward situation, right? Like, this is the kind of signing we've seen the Patriots major in for years, where we've got a talented player who's coming off a bad situation where maybe the overall perception of him is down a little bit. And so, looking out going forward, Chris, you mentioned, what are some of the criteria of teams that are going to be bringing Odell Beckham Jr. in from here on out? Got to be a playoff contender, got to be productive on offense, have an established head coach. You've got to probably have over $7.25 million in cap space. That's what he's going to cost you from here on out. Although we know people can get creative with that, turn rosters into signing bonuses, all that stuff. And so looking at the teams that qualify just based off cap space, Chris, the Jags are out, the Eagles are out, the Broncos are out. None of those are playoff teams as presently constructed. None of them have offenses that you'd write home about. So would you agree with me cutting those off right now probably makes sense?
Yeah, I'm on board with that. We can go ahead and put those teams off to the side.
I'd say for the same reasons, Chris, more teams with the cap space. The Carolina Panthers, Sam Darnold at quarterback, 8th in the NFC playoff standings, but 30th in offensive efficiency. Probably not going to place he wants to be, along with a place like the Pittsburgh Steelers, who we saw last night. I don't think with Ben Roethlisberger as presently constructed, going to be a landing spot. So we can X those out, right?
Agreed.
So then this starts to bring us to, I think, the teams that become infinitely more interesting in this. Also meant to cross off the Washington football team. I don't really need to explain that. You've all seen them play football this year. He ain't going to go there. So looking up at the rest of the teams now that qualify based on cap space, and then we'll add in the other popular name here, Chris. The Chargers and the Seahawks both have the cap space. The Seahawks obviously have Russell Wilson, who's going to be a Hall of Famer. They've got the 10th seed in the NFC playoff standings, but we know there's time for that to change. They're 12th in offensive efficiency, and that's a team that's already got a lot of heat in that wide receiver room. Then there's the Chargers, 3rd in the AFC playoff standings right now, 5th in offensive efficiency, Justin Herbert, your young star quarterback. So I feel like between those two teams, Chris, and the New England Patriots, that's probably going to bring up a lion's share of the conversation at this point.
No question about it. And for Seattle, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because you have a strong head coach in Pete Carroll. You've got an incumbent quarterback in Russell Wilson, who is already, you know, proven himself in this league. He's got a Super Bowl on his resume and considered one of the 5 best quarterbacks when he's healthy in the National Football League. And you have the need, right? Because you start talking about the threats that they have on the offensive side of the ball, and they could stand to add to the supporting cast that Russell Wilson has to work with. And that's what this entire year has been about for the Seattle Seahawks as an organization, being able to support Russell Wilson in the right way. Like, we heard the grumblings earlier on this offseason about how he wasn't happy and that, you know, he doesn't want to be traded, but if he were to be traded, here are a list of the teams that he would consider. Like, all of these things led to them deciding to hire a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron, them deciding to make the move to bring over Gabe Jackson, offensive lineman. And so this would be another one of those moves to support everything else that they've done to try to convince Russell Wilson that Seattle is the place that he needs to stay for the remainder of his career. And so it feels like from a personality standpoint, that would that locker room would be able to absorb a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. And from an X's and O's standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world based on what we know Seattle wants to do, which is attack defenses in the vertical passing game.
By the way, we've got breaking news now. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, tweeted out, wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. went unclaimed on waivers. He is now a free agent, free to sign wherever he wants. And so, Chris, this does change the pricing situation. Had he been claimed on waivers, a team would have owed him that $7.25 million. Now he can sign wherever, and this changes the finances of it a little bit.
Yeah, it changes the finances of it, but I think it also changes the options for Odell, meaning that, you know, there are going to be some other teams that can't necessarily afford the price tag that he would have had to been paid, but that would seemingly be good fits for him, if for no other reason, for him to reestablish his value in the league and to be able to command top dollar when he hits the offseason in the open market. Like, to me, that makes all of the sense in the world to hook up with a team that's a championship contender that has a need at the receiver position, and a team that, from an offensive standpoint, is vastly different than what you're coming out of. The Cleveland Browns offense, the engine for that unit was the run game. I'm pretty sure that Odell is not in a hurry to sign up for a similar outfit. Like, there's going to have to be a different dynamic in terms of how his next offense moves the ball, and it's going to have to be through the air. So it just feels like this opens the door for more possibilities for Beckham if he's open to it. And one of those possibilities for me has to be the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it just has to be. And I know that you quit that narcotic and you don't necessarily trust that the Chiefs are a team that can make a playoff push. But they're the perfect team in terms of the actual need. They've been searching for that receiver opposite of Tyreek Hill since Sammy Watkins left. Like, you have Pat Mahomes, a former MVP. We know he can light it up. We know how creative Andy Reid is as a head coach. And, oh, by the way, somebody that's versed in dealing with issues with players. But then you also have the urgency, the desperation that an organization would need to make the decision to bring Odell into that locker room, knowing that the baggage that he has coming along with him. So, to me, Kansas City has to be another one of those teams that you put on the list.
Chris, I completely agree. Based on where we sit now, we talked about the list of teams that would be available to this based on that price tag if we were talking about waivers here. And I think the Seahawks and Chargers would have been interesting additions to that one. But now that we have cracked this thing wide open, I think you're right. I think the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers end up being the two most interesting ones to me. And it's similar situations in both, right? You've got a quarterback that is capable of operating off script and getting the ball to spots for receivers that few other people can. You've got a definite need at number two in both places because Tyreek Hill's the guy in Kansas City. Devontae Adams is the guy in Green Bay. But outside of that, there is a need for a clear number two. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Alan Lazard, all these guys are good receivers that Aaron Rodgers has made better. They pale in comparison to the kind of talent Odell Beckham Jr. would bring to a place that we know Aaron Rodgers has been asking very publicly, like Russell Wilson, for weapons for a while. He got Randall Cobb over there. I have a feeling Odell Beckham Jr. would hit a little bit more like what he intended at the start of this conversation. We know this decision would have a lot to do with what Aaron Rodgers does or doesn't want, because we've seen that's affected the Packers front office. But I feel like those two teams and likely the Seattle Seahawks are going to be the three biggest players in all this.
Yeah, and with Green Bay, there's a lot less risk in terms of making sure that you're on a contending team. Because out of those three teams, we know that the Green Bay Packers are going to be in the playoffs. I mean, look at their division. Nobody else has more than three wins. So, I mean, the reality is that the Green Bay Packers, like, this is not about, you know, trying to win the division. This is about just trying to position themselves for playoff seeding. And then once you get in the tournament, being able to go on a run. So there will be that time that Odell and Aaron Rodgers could have to establish that chemistry, so they're hitting their stride at the most important time of the season. So, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense, too. I'm not sure where the Packers organization is at with it. There's a lot of noise around that team right now. So I don't know if bringing in a guy like Odell Beckham is something that Matt LaFleur wants to deal with. But in terms of having more weapons, like, I mean, putting a player like Odell Beckham Jr. at Aaron Rodgers' disposal in opposite of Devontae Adams, like, that's going to be a nightmare for opposing defenses to game plan for.
I think where that organization is with their star quarterback, what they know could be coming after this offseason, the urgency in trying to get over that NFC championship hump from the last couple of years, the Green Bay Packers make an overwhelming amount of sense for Odell Beckham Jr., who has now cleared waivers and is free to sign with any team in the NFL. By the way, Darius Slay already shooting his shot, saying, hey, OBJ, we haven't played the Giants yet this year. Just saying, in case he wanted to link up there, get a little shot of revenge here.
Real lifestyle change for OBJ if he goes to Green Bay, though.
Yeah. Hey, listen, he already lived in Cleveland, all right? He is used to the lifestyle change after leaving New York.
Yeah,
so.
but Cleveland makes Green Bay look like New York City. Just saying.
We are brought to you by Cross Country Mortgage, proud to honor those who served our nation, veterans and armed services members. We salute you. That is an accurate statement. Coming up next.
Yeah.
We head to the gutter here. It's Tuesday around Canyon Gold Jr., which means it's time to get to the top five, bottom five from the weekend that was, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canyon Gold Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Gold Jr., Chris Canty, and Gojo. Week 9 brought a lot of surprises for us, a lot of upsets around the National Football League. I want to say 5 division leaders got upset on Sunday. So a lot of surprises around the NFL, a lot of things going on. And so there's quite a few things for us to react to when it comes to the bottom 5 things that I saw throughout Week 9 in the NFL. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
All right, let's start off with number 5.
Number 5.
Okay, this belongs to Jets head coach Rob Saleh, and I get it. The New York Jets are the low-hanging fruit, but I gotta get him for this one. He told Joe Buck and Troy Aikman prior to the Thursday night game against the Colts that the defensive line that he had, the room that he had, is the best that he's ever been a part of. Now, this defensive line with Shaq Lawson, Quinnen Williams, Sheldon Rankins, and John Franklin Myers, you know, good personnel-wise,
Yeah. Not
necessarily good when it comes to production. The Jets are dead last in the NFL in team defense and points allowed. And in 2019, Rob Saleh happened to be the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, where they had a defensive front that featured Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, and Dee Ford. Is there any argument from a talent standpoint which defensive line room is better? You're talking about a group in 2019 that had 48 sacks. Rob Saleh's got to chill out. And to make matters worse, what happened in that Thursday night game against the Colts? They tuned the Jets up 260 yards on 30 rush attempts. Doesn't sound like great defensive line play to me. They got blasted. That defense has given up 54 points, 31 points, and 45 points in the last 3 outings. So, Rob Saleh, I feel what you're talking about. You want to back your guys, but you got to chill out when it comes to, you know, selling those tickets, because your guys just can't cash those in. They just can't.
There's no way even the guys in that room believe him when he says that, Chris. Like, you can be in that Jets D-line room and look up at a D-line where Nick Bosa was almost the Super Bowl MVP and say, listen, coach, appreciate you. Thanks for having my back. We don't got to lie to kick it like this.
Exactly. Perfect line to cap off number 5. Let's get to number 4.
Number 4.
All right, this is the Dallas Cowboys, man, and I hate to do it to him, but I got to do it to him. Because coming out of the bye week, Dak back in the lineup, there's no way that you should let the Denver Broncos beat the brakes off of you. That game was 30-0 till about 4 minutes left, and it wasn't nearly as close as the final score would suggest. Prior to those last 2 possessions, the Dallas offense ran a total of 37 snaps, and they held the ball for 14 minutes and 16 seconds. Not to mention, they were playing a team that essentially decided to punt on the season when they traded Von Miller before the deadline this past week. Let's also remember, Gojo, that before Sunday, the Denver Broncos' opponents had a combined record of 7-23. Serves as a reminder that no matter how good you are, you still got to earn your wins in this league. And the Dallas Cowboys thought that they were just going to roll their helmets out there after the bye week and get a win against the hapless Denver Broncos.
My favorite part of all of this was seeing a quote from Jerry Jones today that said, Denver didn't do anything we weren't expecting. Quote, we anticipated it. I went over it carefully with Mike McCarthy before the game. What they came out doing, we anticipated completely. Chris, I would pay pay-per-view style prices to see Mike McCarthy's face while Jerry Jones is sitting there trying to go over the game plan with him pregame.
Pretty sure he didn't anticipate that butt kicking. But anyway, let's go to number three.
Number three.
Ah, yes, Mike, it's our weekly edition of Kickers Aren't Football Players featuring Jacksonville Jaguars kicker Marcus Wright. In the third quarter against the Bills, he lines up for a 42-yard field goal, misses the kick, but gets bailed out by a false start, lines up for a 47-yard attempt, misses it, but gets another crack at it because of a running into the kicker penalty. Third try, 42 yards, misses it again. Perfect example of third time not being the charm. Now he makes a 21-yard field goal early in the fourth quarter for the go-ahead score, but really there is no excuse for missing three consecutive kicks from that distance. Once again, a reminder that kickers aren't football players. They only have one job to do, and apparently Marcus Wright couldn't do that right on Sunday.
I award him no points. Well, in this case, 9 points. And may God have mercy on his soul.
All right, let's get to number two.
Number two.
It's Tony Corrente and the crew, the refs from Monday Night Football. They ended up being the show rather than the players. Starting with the Bears' drive before halftime, third and two with two-minute warning, Jason Peters pulls around the edge outside of the tackle box and gets cut down on an illegal cut block by Minka Fitzpatrick. Bears still pick up the first down, but it should have been a penalty. Later in the third quarter, penalty called on offensive guard James Daniel for an illegal cut block, which was inside the tackle box on the goal line. He doesn't touch T.J. Watt. But yet the ref still throws the flag, takes off a touchdown throw from Justin Fields to Jimmy Graham, and it ends up being a situation where the Bears have to settle for three rather than taking the touchdown and making it a four-point game. That is as egregious as it gets. To me, that was worse than the Cassius Marsh taunting penalty. That's just how I see it go, Joe. But the refs overall on Monday Night Football were just awful.
To quote one of the great poet laureates of our time, the fish from SpongeBob, oh, brother, these guys stink.
And number one.
Number one.
Usually we got to take a lot more time to do number one, but this is not that complicated. Nope. It's Sam Darnold. I mean, he threw more touchdown passes to the Patriots secondary than he did his own receivers. And, Mike, just to kind of bring it into focus how bad he was, he had a quarterback rating of 26.3 and a QBR of 3. Oh. I had to look twice just to make sure. The QBR was 3. You don't have to practice to do that. But I guess the only thing that's worse than Sam Darnold having the performance that he did on Sunday's game against the Patriots is that the Carolina Panthers picked up Sam Darnold's option, fifth-year option for 2022, paying him $19 million, when it's clear that he's not the long-term solution for them at the quarterback position.
Nope, we found out that Sam Darnold is apparently who we thought he was as the quarterback at USC here. Everyone has tried to convince themselves otherwise. Somewhere, Adam Gase enjoys himself a nice cold beverage on a warm, sunny beach. That is the bottom five from NFL's Week 9. Crazy, we're already at that point in the season right now. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet's hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit Progressive.com. But coming up next, why did we ever doubt that Justin Fields was capable of what we saw last night in Monday Night Football? But will it be enough to save their head coach's job? We'll head there next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, that's where we got to go now to bring on David Kaplan from Cap and J Hood on ESPN 1000 in Chicago, mornings from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. And Cap, I got to ask you, last night, I thought we saw in that second half a little bit of the potential that Justin Fields has. And I just got to ask you this question point blank. How good does he have to play in the second half of this season in order to save Matt Nagy's job?
I don't think it matters. It's great to be with you guys. I will be very surprised if Matt Nagy's the football coach next season. Now, if you tell me they go out and off the, they're got a bye now, and then they beat Baltimore, they win at Thanksgiving, they beat Arizona, they beat Green Bay and Green Bay, they take one of two from Minnesota, like have this really good run. I guess anything's possible. I just don't see that scenario playing out. So I will be surprised if Matt is the football coach next year.
Cap, when it came to Justin Fields getting on the field in general, where were you on how early he should be there? Did you want to see him on right away?
Yeah, I did not like the fact that we did not have an open competition in camp. I used to be a college coach. I always believed we went to our preseason practices. I was a basketball coach. And, hey, man, if Mike Golic and Chris are going to battle for the point guard spot, may the best man win. And if one's a senior or one's a freshman and the freshman's a better player, let's go. That's the guy that we're going to roll with then. And Justin didn't even get an opportunity. Under no circumstance can he be the starter. Why not? That's just silly. It's not as though we have Tom Brady's the extreme. It's not as though they have some really solid, you know, veteran quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. He wasn't our quarterback where, no, we're going to go with the veteran. We'll let the kid develop. We had Andy Dalton, for crying out loud. So, yeah, I didn't get it.
Cap, here's the thing. If the Bears don't make the playoffs, will Justin Fields' steady improvement be enough for Bears fans to be content about this season, potentially looking at this as a building block for their young franchise quarterback?
Only if and only if there's a coaching change. Most fans, I would say 80% or more, want a regime change. They want the GM swept out. They want the coaching staff out. Now, again, it's all about Justin because we've never had a quarterback here. I mean, literally, 71 years was the last time we had a franchise quarterback. That's how insane it is. His name was Sid Luckman.
Mm-hmm.
I think what might happen, I'm not telling you this is what I would do, but I think what could happen is Ryan Pace gets kicked upstairs because they have nobody that knows football anywhere in the building other than his staff. So if you fire Ryan, sweep his staff out, fire Matt, sweep his staff out, who's doing the hiring? Ted Phillips and George McCaskey? Stop yourself. 2013, they had a meeting in Hallis Hall one evening. They're going to hire a new coach. They have just hired Phil Emery as the general manager. They have the two finalists. One of them comes in. The finalist is sitting there, and they tell him, hey, we want you to do a mock press conference so we see how you interact with the media in Chicago. Not live, just staged press conference. He says, absolutely not. I've been a head coach in the NFL. Pull up any of the tapes. Talk to any of the media in the city I was in. I think I know what I'm doing. Now we're going to go with Mark Trestman. But thanks for coming, Bruce Arians. Yeah, that's a true story.
Oh, Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canny, talking to David Kaplan from Cap and Jay Hood and ESPN 1000 in Chicago. That is depressing. I'd imagine that's even more depressing than the taunting call that thwarted the Bears' plans last night. Cap, have you guys recovered as a city from that yet?
So, look, I don't like the rule, Michael. I don't. I think it's being over-officiated. But you can't even put yourself in the gray area. Like, hey, man, Cassius Marsh, what are you doing looking at their sideline, taking any steps over there? You're not on Pittsburgh anymore. They cut you. You're on Chicago. Go to your side. It's gray. Do I think Tony Corrente had an awful night? I did. Tony Corrente, who's a big-time official, was horrific last night. It cost the Bears probably a win. But what are you doing putting yourself in the gray area when you know that they're making these calls league-wide?
Did most fans buy the explanation that you got from Cassius Marsh post-game about the official hip-checking him on his way to the sideline?
Yeah, most fans that were calling our show today, I mean, we start at 7. At a quarter to 7, all 10 lines were already lit. People were that upset. And 98% of them are Tony Corrente's a boob. That's a horrible call. Again, I don't agree with the call, but the rule is the rule. you can't put yourself in that position. But most people were empathetic to our player side and just full of vitriol for the referee.
A lot of that to go around, especially between that call, the way they officiated Justin Fields in the pocket. It was a rough night for that crew, but a lot of hope going forward with the star young quarterback. Cap, we appreciate you giving us some time today. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon, not about your team getting jobbed because of an officiating call.
You got it. I look forward to it. I listen to you guys a lot, so keep rolling.
Appreciate that. David Kaplan, co-host of Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000. You can catch them in Chicago, 7 to 10 a.m. Central, Monday through Friday. Chris, I think the funny part, too, that gets forgotten about that Cassius Marsh call is he got called for taunting for going over and staring at the sideline from 25 yards away about 10 seconds after he did a full-blown roundhouse kick in the air coming off the sack that was incredibly physically impressive and way more taunting than looking at the sideline.
Yeah, that's straight out of the Johnny Lawrence Cobra Kai school of things. I mean, that was really impressive to see him do that, but apparently that's what he does after every single sack his entire eight-year career, so good on him for staying on brand, but that's the crazy part about all of this. Like, that wasn't the taunting foul. Him going over and staring at the sideline, seemingly saying nothing, from 25 yards away is what drew the flag from Tony Corrente's crew. Like, that part about it makes no sense to me. And I get what Cap is talking about not leaving any gray area. To me, I don't know that there was much gray area. I get that taunting is a subjective call, but again, what was Cassius Marsh doing in that moment that could potentially lead to something happening on the field in the way of an altercation? That's the part I didn't see. That's the part I don't understand. Even after hearing the explanations for it, still makes no sense to me. That was a bad call by the officials.
I kind of get what Cap is saying. I just think it's so extraordinarily lame. That's my beef with all of it. So that is what it is at this point. We're brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, he mentioned the call lines, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We will get to some of your calls and the lack of brotherly love that we've seen recently in the NBA. We'll get to all that after this word from Indeed. Now, we get it. It's your business. You want to be involved in all the decisions, especially who you hire. Then you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. So spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and listen, Gojo, you and I are never ones to shy away from a fight. I mean, we spent a lot of our lives in the trenches playing a game of football. You're on the offensive line, I'm on the defensive line, and that essentially is a fist fight for 40 to 45 plays every single game. Am I not right?
No, that's 100% right. You're going to go out and ram your head into another large, usually 300-plus pound person for about 4 hours, and along the way, it shouldn't surprise anybody that there's a lot of disgruntled dudes that wind up in there ready to throw bows at any given point in time. So that's kind of life in the trenches at this point, Chris, which always makes it funny when we turn the conversation to basketball fights.
No question about it. And in this instance, what happened with the Denver Nuggets and Jokic running into Markieff Morris last night, the Miami Heat forward, that's going to spark a little bit of controversy because now we got real beef, real life beef between the Morris twins and the Jokic brothers, and I gotta for one say that I'm here for all of the beef. So, of course, we're talking about this as the league looks into whether to levy any fine or any further punishment to Denver Nuggets star Jokic after the ejection for his running into Morris with 2:39 left in the fourth quarter during the Nuggets' 113-96 win over the Miami Heat. And, of course, the other Morris twin, L.A. Clippers forward Marcus Morris, chimed in on Twitter saying this: waited until bro turned his back, shaking my head, noted. I'm just saying, when somebody puts something like that out on social media, that lets you know that this is not over. So we have not seen the last of one of the Morris twins going at Nikola Jokic's neck.
No, and so we had that response from one of the Morrises here. We had the Jokic brothers, who apparently made a Twitter account called at Jokic Brothers, that said, you should leave this way instead of publicly threatening our brother. Your brother made a dirty play first. If you want to make a step further, be sure we will be waiting for you. And then they signed at Jokic Brothers, which is actually kind of the hilarious part of all of this. Now,
I love the grammar, too. I love it. I mean, the Jokic Brothers, grammatically correct in every sense of the word. Like, just perfect, perfect diction on that tweet. I love it. Gotta respect it.
I will say, from Nikola Jokic's perspective, he said after the game, quote, "It's a stupid play. I feel bad. I'm not supposed to react that way. I thought it was going to be a take foul. I think it was a dirty play, and I just needed to protect myself. I feel bad. I'm not supposed to react that way, but I need to protect myself." That's not the reaction I'm concerned with, Chris, because what you and I both noticed in the immediacy after this, because Nikola Jokic going up and hitting Morris from behind, that was out of bounds, right? Like, you'd prefer it to be straight up in all this one. I'd rather him not go about it like that. The thing I was concerned with was the fact that after he did it, I didn't see a single Heat player that was on the court run up on Jokic to try and have their dudes back.
Yeah, if I'm Marquise Morris today, I'm looking at Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, because both of those guys were in the vicinity. And for them not to even get a shove on Jokic, for it to have to be the two referees that run up and move Jokic away from Marquise Morris, like, at that point, it's like, we might have to have some words, and it might come to these hands in the locker room just so we can be on the same page so this never happens again. Mike, you know the code when it comes to guys having each other's back in the locker room, man. If somebody takes a shot at one of our guys, they take a shot at all of us, and everybody's retaliating, and we don't care that it's not a fair fight. Like, that's not what it's supposed to be in the heat of competition. So for Bam Adebayo, who prides himself on being a tough guy and a defensive-minded player, and for Tyler Hero, talking all that cash money about how he wants to be one of the more respected young players in the league, for them not to have Markieff Morris's back in that situation, they dead wrong. Now, let me say this. Markieff Morris was also dead wrong, because that was not a take foul. Like, he was clearly trying to stop a fast break, and we understand what those fouls look like, and that foul was not that. Like, he threw an elbow in there with Nikola Jokic, and he might have bumped knees with him as well. So I can understand why Jokic was infuriated and retaliated the way that he did. Now, full speed, while somebody's got their back turned, giving them a shoulder, yeah, I'm not here for it, but I can understand it, especially within the context of the Morris twins, who have a reputation and have been known to get out of pocket every now and again.
Yeah, well-earned reputation in that spot.
Yeah, yeah. And I say that from personal experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a Morris twin story. So once upon a time, whenever they got drafted, you know, the NBA draft is in New York City, so that's usually a big party night. And I just so happened to take part in the festivities on this particular occasion at a nightclub not to be named. And so I'm in the nightclub, walking to my table, and I happen to bump into one of the Morris twins. And, you know, it's just the excuse me. And I got a stare, and, you know, it's just kind of one of those stares like there might be beef. But, you know, I let it go because it's a young guy. They're feeling themselves. They just got drafted. Cool. Let it be what it is. I'm walking back to my table, get bumped again. Got the same stare, this time with a little bit more of a mug. And I might have had some words to say, you know, just kind of remember where you're at. Remember, you know, what you do for a living in comparison to what I do. And, you know, it just felt like there might be real beef with these dudes. And I just did not understand it. So I get the reputation of the Morris twins, and I know how they can push the envelope. So I understand why Jokic got ejected. But that still doesn't mean that he was in the right for doing what he did.
Yeah, no. Listen, there are levels to all this. You can go out here and be tough on the court here. Chris Canty was a professional people mover for a good long time here. Not the tree you want to bark up. Speaking of barking up the wrong tree, we'll hear more of what Aaron Rodgers had to say earlier today next on ESPN Radio.